It's April 8th, 2017. If you want to become part of the program, the number is 254-697-6633. Toll free, it's 866-504-1051. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or go directly to the website, aaronsgunshop.com, and like us there on Facebook. Go ahead, everybody, like us. Go get your phones, get your laptops, get whatever device you're going to use. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, click on Facebook, give me a like, okay? Show us, give us some support there. And if you want to support us, give us some calls, come to our functions, become a sponsor, many things you can do to help promote the show. Okay. As always, I'm very honored to have either Rick or Ross here with me. We've got Super Attorney Rick Dodd here from Cameron. And Rick, it's always a pleasure to have you on board here. I enjoy the conversation. We get into it very well and answer a lot of questions. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great today. It's a beautiful day outside.
Absolutely. Great day for cutting grass, isn't it?
It'd be a good kite flying day, too.
Yeah, good luck. Okay, Rick, here's what we're going to do. First of all, Rick, tell everybody how they can get a hold of you and what your specialties are, because I'm sure there's many people out there who would just love to give you a call because they got certain types of troubles that they need to resolve.
My law firm has been practicing law now for about 35 years here in Cameron. One of my partners is a medical doctor and a lawyer, so obviously we specialize in injuries, serious injuries. We do a lot of products cases involving products that causes injuries. For instance, here we have a lot of asbestos cases. We also do tire blowout, rollover cases where the roof crushes or the windows pop out, back latches sometimes and vans blow out, those sort of things. Truck wrecks, we're members of the truck wreck litigation section of our National Trial Lawyers Association, things like that. I mean, you can get a hold of us by looking us up at respectforyou.com or asbestoslaw.com, and you can get a lot of information about even one of these subjects. Pharmaceuticals that cause injuries. Like, for instance, I remember a few years ago we had some cases involving a drug called Zyprexa that was given to people who were bipolar, and it caused diabetes. And, of course, the drug company knew that, but they didn't tell the FDA that when they got approval. So we had a bunch of people out there who were bipolar and paranoid. They had diabetes, and the only way you can control diabetes is by taking medication, but these folks didn't want to do that because they were paranoid. It was a mess, to say the least.
I'm not laughing at that. I'm just laughing at the...
Well, it is. I mean, it is kind of funny when you consider the consequences of that sort of action. In a serious light, though, it was just horrible for these poor folks.
You know, it's funny. Attorneys get a bad rep, you know. People make fun of attorneys all the time, except when you need one, right?
Well, that's right. It's kind of like emergency room doctors. You know, I don't want to go see an emergency room doctor. It's the last thing I want to do, but I sure am happy when they're there and I need one.
Okay, so check them out. If you're on my website, you can go to the radio page. We've got a link there to respectforyou.com, and you can check out Rick and all of his associates there and what they do. So if you need some help, give him a call. Okay, Rick, we got you in here for Penal Code 904. And as always, I've got questions, and the questions bring more questions when you start talking because it's like, oh, I didn't think about that. So why don't we just take it step by step here? Question number one. First of all, let me read the penal code one more time just so everybody's on the same sheet of music here. And yeah, but I can't see that penal code. All right, the penal code here is 904, threat is justifiable force. The threat of force is justified when the use of force is justified by this chapter. For purposes of this section, a threat to cause death or serious bodily injury by the production of a weapon or otherwise, as long as the actor's purpose is limited to creating an apprehension that he will use deadly force if necessary, does not constitute the use of deadly force. When I'm teaching this in my class, I read this fast for a reason, because when I read it slow, I get the same response from my students. And it's like, huh? What did they just say? So I read it fast and say, this is what it means. And I just gave a story a minute ago about me walking down the street. So let's talk about that. And the first question I have is this, and jump in with any kind of comments that you got. A threat to cause serious bodily injury by the production of a weapon is kind of obvious. But how do the two words "or otherwise" apply in this penal code? And can you give me some examples of what those two words mean?
Well, frankly, no. I have no idea. I think, though, what they're looking at is they're going back to the penal codes that you and Ross talked about last week that have to do with protecting yourself. You know, you can protect yourself and defend yourself. And the two penal codes y'all talked about were the ones that were entitled self-defense, and then the other one, deadly force in defense of a person. So otherwise, you know, a weapon is a weapon. Obviously, it doesn't have to be a gun or a pistol. A weapon can be a machete, as defined under the penal codes that we talked about 3 weeks ago. So, or otherwise, I'm not real clear what they mean by that, except maybe they're talking about something that might not necessarily be defined as a weapon under those previous penal codes.
Rick, could you
But there's no case law about that.
Who writes these laws?
The Senate and the or the House of Representatives over in Austin, the folks that we've elected. But, you know, they have help. They have people that work for them and with them.
That's what I was getting at, that part of it. And so why would they put those in there if your expertise says there's really – I don't get it. Why do they throw that stuff in there for confusion?
Well, I guess to try to cover themselves. I mean, a lot of the information they get when they write these penal codes come from prosecutors, district attorneys, people who have been in the business a really long time. They don't typically go to defense lawyers and ask their opinions, because the defense lawyers are, of course, paid by somebody beside the state. So they get help from those people that are able to give them help, who have the expertise. The only thing I can imagine is they're just trying to cover more bases than they really should try to cover here.
Okay. By covering more bases, we get more confusion, right?
That's right. That's the problem with that.
Okay. Let's go to another question here. In the eyes of the law, what would be considered creating an apprehension? Now, I know these questions sound simplistic, but I also know the courtroom is not simplistic. I want to know the minefields of the courtroom when it comes to this or any penal code.
Well, you got to look at this penal code. Remember that what you're looking at is a protection for the person who has their license to carry. In other words, if you have a license to carry and you're carrying a weapon, and you pull it out, if you feel like you're at risk, then you are protected. So creating the apprehension for someone else, basically if you pull your weapon out, all of a sudden they have an apprehension. So the three things that I can comment about that is, number one is you don't have to have the intent to shoot anybody when you pull your gun out. But what you're doing is you are trying to create an apprehension in someone that you see as a risk for your person or your property or the people that are with you, to cause them to stop in their tracks. In other words, they become apprehensive and stop and move away from you. And it's perfectly legal to do that. Of course, if you do have an intent to shoot them, which you would if you pulled your gun out and they were coming at you, that would certainly be an intent to create an apprehension. Or if you did actually shoot them, then obviously that would be another creation of apprehension from their perspective.
Yes, I agree. But, you know, I want to make a comment. You're talking here, and twice within the course of the conversation, this thing pops in my head. A lot of people, I have heard a lot of people say, if you're going to pull the gun out, you're going to use it, in the sense of you're going to fire it. Well, I've always disagreed with that. I haven't really verbally said it, but in my head I'm saying, no, not really. I'm not going to, just because I pull it out doesn't mean I'm going to use it. Here's a perfect example, Penal Code 904. I can either keep it in my holster and show it, or I can pull it out and show it. It's still equal to the same thing, right?
Yes, basically so. I mean, really though, you can now show it. I mean, we have open carry now. So you don't necessarily have to consider yourself a criminal no one else can consider you a criminal if you show it. But it's really pulling it out is when you create a situation where you might be arrested, because you're not supposed to pull your weapon out unless there is a imminent harm possible to you by someone else. That's even true for a police officer. A police officer can't just pull their gun out anytime they feel like it and brandish it in public. There has to be a reason to pull it out.
Understood. Very interesting, the fine point. So in this one question where I said the minefields, what would minefields be? The matter of what you just said of pulling it out when really maybe you shouldn't have pulled it out? Yeah, well, just tell him to stand by 1 second. We got a call on the line. We'll talk to him in just 1 second.
Well, there's a case called the Gambino versus State, and we can talk about that a little bit more if you want to go ahead and talk to Mr. Johnson.
Okay. Trey, how do we got this working here? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we got a call on the line. And just tell me when we're up and running here, Trey. This is very interesting when you read it one way. Mr. Johnson, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing all right. Doing pretty good.
What can we do for you today?
Yeah, I wanted to ask if you got a prowler mess around your house at night, do you have the right to shoot them?
Well, that's a wide open question.
Well,
I mean, if the prowler is outside your house, is he an actual threat to you?
Well, I don't have nobody. I just always wanted to know if I had the right to shoot him.
Well, that's what we're doing. We're working this out right now. So, in other words, you're in your home. Your doors are locked, your windows are locked, and you see a prowler outside. Is he a threat to you? No, right?
Yeah,
not at this point.
Mess around like trying to steal something.
Well, that's a different aspect. I mean, if they're stealing something, there's laws that apply to that at nighttime, especially. But the specific question you asked me was, if I've got a prowler around, can I shoot him? The answer is no, because he is not a threat to you. If for some reason you're outside and you get confronted with him and you felt that your life was in danger at that moment, or it's in the middle of the night and they're stealing things from you and you feel as though it's the only way you can stop them, the law protects you to some degree in that manner. But what you need to do in a situation like that, if you have a prowler, is stay in your house, call the police, call the sheriff's department. And
only way I could shoot him if he's a threat to me.
A threat to you, or if in certain penal codes it states that your property's being stolen, or there's imminent threat of arson, or things of that nature. But if somebody's just outside your home prowling, no, sir. No, that would not be good.
Okay, I just wanted to find that out. Yeah, okay, yeah, it'd be best I do, call the police.
Yeah, Mr. Johnson, that's absolutely true. I've got to tell you, though, if somebody's outside your house prowling around, they probably have an intent to steal, but I think the penal code says they have to be stealing. So where do you draw the line? The jury draws that line, and I'd hate to see you in front of that jury.
All right. Thank you a lot, sir.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, you bet.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was a great question. If you have any questions, 254-697-6633. You get to speak to Super Attorney Rick Dodd here. He's just incredible with his information and his research. He doesn't come in here empty-handed. He's prepared and ready to go. Rick, are we finished up on that one? Anything you want to follow up?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about that. There was one case that I found that came out of Fort Worth. If you've been to Fort Worth, you've probably been to the Sundance Square. So there's a fellow and his girlfriend out at Sundance Square getting in their car after a night of being out on the town. And he winds up going to his car and pulling out his pistol and aiming at a gentleman named Khan. Now, the police officers that were on the scene drew down on him, and as soon as he saw the police officers, he put the pistol down and was ordered onto the ground. The story is interesting in that the police officers said they smelled alcohol on him and that his eyes failed the field sobriety test. And so they arrested him, and they charged him not only with being drunk with a pistol, but also with threatening someone, Mr. Khan, with deadly force. But he said that Mr. Khan had threatened his wife, or his girlfriend, and said they were going to sodomize her. They said they were going to sodomize her, and there wasn't a damn thing that he could do about it, and they were going to beat him up. So that was his story, if you may, as far as his need to show deadly force. Of course, the other stories by the police and the other folks was different. But the bottom line was, in the case was overturned where he was found guilty because the appellant court said that the trial court did not go ahead and put in front of the jury an issue. In other words, for the jury to actually answer the fact question of whether or not he was justified in pulling out his pistol, because he did give some testimony that there was a threat to him and his girlfriend. Regardless of whether he had been drinking, regardless of whether or not that had caused him to be intoxicated, regardless of the three other testimony from the police officers, regardless of the three people that were with Mr. Kahn, he did present testimony. The trial court should have allowed the jury to answer the question that was given to us here in 904, but because of that, his conviction was overturned.
So nothing's easy. It's never easy. I mean, it's got to be just so cut and dry for you to apply these penal codes. Otherwise, when you think you're in the right, if you just didn't do something 100% correct, it could be flipped around on you to the negative as compared to the positive for you, right?
That's true. But here you had a situation where he was in a very crowded place, so he's pulling out his pistol and waving it around. It just didn't seem right. I mean, but, you know, bottom line was that he was charged justifiably, in my opinion, and then the court should have given him that instruction. His lawyer requested the instruction, the court denied the instruction, and that's where the mistake was made, in my opinion.
See, that's why I love this section, because I'm reading off of black and white, but I'm smart enough to know that these are just guidelines. Rules are like, you got the Ranger Handbook in the military. You don't do exactly what it says. That's your guideline. It's a pretty darn good guideline, but you got to have common sense to look through the cracks to make sure you know what to do when things are just a little bit out of whack. So that's why I like this. We get to see the black and white on paper side, and then we get to talk to Super Attorney here, Rick Dodd, to get the information in the cracks.
One other thing I want to point out about this self-defense, and this applies to what y'all talked about last week too. Whenever you raise the issue of self-defense, when you go to court and you're the defendant and you've been charged with these crimes, and you say, well, it was done in self-defense, whether it's, you know, just pulling out a weapon or actually having shot someone, you have to first admit to all of the other elements. Yes, it was me, I shot the man, or I pulled out the weapon. But then in order to raise the defense itself, then you have to come up with the other elements of, well, I was threatened. My body was threatened, my property was threatened, the people that were with me were threatened. So,
it's
first,
a check,
though,
it's
you
a
have
checklist.
To say, I'm the one.
Well, sure, you got to take it, you got to stand up what you do, so you can't walk away from it.
Right.
All right, sir, let's go to another question here. What should a person do after they have threatened someone with force to stop a dangerous situation, and why should they do this? Contact police.
Well, what you mentioned it earlier, you said it just as clear as anyone could, and that is you need to call the police. Because if you don't, there's going to be someone else calling the police, talking about some crazy gun-carrying fool that's waving his pistol around out in the middle of Sundance while he's been drinking. and you know, you're going to get in trouble. So if you go ahead and call the police, tell the police, you know, who you are, that you have a license to carry, and that where you are, what kind of clothes you're wearing, and where your pistol is, you know, they may not get another call, they may not come out, but if they do come out, of course, you want to be clean and ready to visit with them.
Rick, if you're my attorney, if I call you up because I'm in a situation, what are things that you say to yourself, I hope he didn't say this?
Well,
I hope he didn't say I did it.
Well, in the situation where Mr. Kahn was threatened by Mr. Gambino, everyone testified that Mr. Gambino said, boy, have I got something for you. I would hope that my client wouldn't say that. I would hope that my client would tell the police officer that he felt that he had a imminent, meaning that it happens right now, not in the future, threat of being hurt himself.
You're writing this down, everybody?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and it's just what the law says. These are the defenses in self-defense. There has to be an imminent threat. So you don't want to say, well, now he told me he's going to beat me up tomorrow if I didn't show up behind the school. You know, that's not going to do it.
You know, there's four words you never want to hear me say. Those four words are, you are scaring me. Because I don't scare easy. And if you're scaring me, you're in a position where your mental thought process away from something further. That's how it should be, I think. You should have composure over yourself. You should have training. You should have mental training, physical training, training with a handgun, so on and so forth. And you put all of those together. And what it does, it gives you options. It gives you time, time and distance, options, so that if you've got to pull that freaking thing out, you've resorted to the last thing you can do. Would you agree with that, sir, or no?
I agree with that. I mean, and I think what you got to think about here is I wouldn't want my client to say, well, I didn't mean to scare him. I wouldn't have been scared if I would have been him, because the issue is whether or not the person on the other end was scared, whether they had the idea in their head that they were in imminent threat. So, you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago. It could be where somebody who's got some black belts and, you know, weighs 280 pounds versus some 100-pound mm-hmm. person. It's going to be a different story from what their intentions are and what their thought patterns are.
Is there anything that you would want the person to say to the officer specifically? I know we're dancing all around it, but is there any one thing that you want to say?
Well,
I want him arrested?
Yeah, well, I always tell people the most important things to say to a police officer are yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. Beyond that, you're on your own.
You're on your own, okay. And you can go respectforyou.com to get Rick to help you out. Okay.
Yeah, I certainly would keep, if they tell you that you are a target of an arrest, that's when you need to keep your mouth shut. If you feel like they are questioning you in such fashion that they are going to arrest you, you can ask them, sir, do you have, or ma'am, do you have an intent to arrest me? If they say yes, then you need to shut your mouth. Period.
Remember that
when you go to the jail and you talk to your buddy or your wife, they're recording all of that. So when I say shut your mouth, I mean shut your mouth.
You just got a whole bunch of free legal advice there, ladies and gentlemen. You better take advantage of it, okay? Now, Rick, we've got some definitions here. I was wondering if you could tell us about it, because sometimes you hear these things and people hear them and they go, okay, yeah, I got it, but do you really got it? So I got a list here of definitions. Maybe you can go over it and just tell us a little bit about each one. And we've
sure.
got about, I don't know, 3-5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Go ahead. We got civil action?
A civil action, yeah. Well, there's two kinds of actions, or two kinds of law. One is civil law, and one is criminal law. In criminal law, it's always going to be state versus the defendant, and then if it gets into the appellate level, then and the defendant has been found guilty, then it would be the defendant versus state. And, of course, those laws are all codified. In other words, they're in codes. We've been talking about the penal code here. There are agriculture code. There's several other codes that the Senate and the House manufacture. Then the civil law has to do with all of the other laws having to do with real estate, marital law, probate law, tort law. Anything beside criminal law then would be a civil action, where you go to court and the penalty, and I'll use the word penalty lightly, but the penalty basically in civil law has to do with making things right, balancing the scale. And most of the time that's done by paying money for damages, or in the situation of marital law, dissolving the marriage or determining who gets custody or who gets property. In probate law, the same situation. In other words, what is and what is not beyond the criminal aspect of life.
What always comes to my mind when I hear those two is O.J. Simpson. He goes to court for murder, which is criminal, gets off of that, but they knocked him down for the civil actions, right?
Absolutely. Well, when you say knocked him down, I mean, they got a big verdict against him.
Yes.
I don't know that they ever collected a penny on that. But one of the things that's interesting about that is the lawyers choosing the venue. The venue where O.J. was found not guilty in the criminal case was quite a bit different than the venue that he was found responsible in the civil case. And the venue had all to do with the folks that wound up on the jury.
What do you mean by venue?
The different courthouse. For instance, if I were going to be involved in a civil case, I would probably want to prosecute that case, say, in Falls County, much more so than I would in, say, Collin County.
Okay, so the venue is location.
Yeah, okay. Location. The counties is the venue here in Texas. And then, of course, jurisdiction would be different states, which also sometimes have better venues.
Okay, let's move on for the lack of time here. Tort suit.
That has to do with filing an action against someone who has caused physical or financial injuries to you. Our Constitution allows for every harm there shall be a remedy. So a tort action is something that is beyond matrimonial law or probate law and certainly beyond criminal law because it is a civil action.
Okay, now the next two I would think come up a lot in... it could potentially come up in the topics that we talk about with guns and all this. It could come up with anything. But negligence and then gross negligence. Why don't you give me a definition for that?
Negligence, of course, revolves around the word neglect. And that has to do with having a duty. And I have a duty to stop at a stop sign. I have a duty not to cross the center line. As a professional, I have a duty to act within the standard of care. In other words, because some other attorney may do something different than I, or 98% of the other attorneys may do something different than I, doesn't mean I've stepped out of the standard of care. But if I do, then I may be responsible and may be held accountable under the laws of negligence. So it's having to do with failing to do something that you should do or doing something that you should not do.
And that's almost because the next one I'm going to read, what you just read about negligence, was unintentional, maybe, but it happened anyway.
It can be intentional. It can be unintentional. But,
okay, because now when we
generally speaking, it's unintentional.
But when we go to gross negligence, from what I'm reading here, that's why I asked the question. Why don't you explain that?
Well, gross negligence doesn't necessarily mean intentional either, because you can have negligence causes of action, you can have gross negligence, and you can have intentional causes of action, and they all carry different remedies. Gross negligence. Generally is what we talk about when we talk about exemplary damages or punitive damages. And that goes beyond the collection of money for your damages. It goes beyond a situation where a jury can actually punish the wrongdoer or cause an example of, that's the example of the wrongdoer, so that other wrongdoers or other potential wrongdoers, and in my business it's usually corporations, can look at that case and go, well, we sure don't want to be dumping that sewage into the water because, look, they had to pay a penalty on top of the damages for cleaning up the river.
Okay. A lot of great information. It's fantastic talking to you and Ross and getting the inside scoop of the expert aspect of what we're talking about here. Rick, we're going to have to close it up. Any final things you want to say one last time? Let people know how they can get a hold of you, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on.
Sure. Well, again, you could look at respectforyou.com and give us a call if you need us. Hopefully you won't. And go out today and go fishing, fly your kite, mow your yard, whatever needs to be done. Hopefully fishing.
Okay, sounds good. All right, everybody, we're going to take a long break. And when we come back, we'll figure out what we're going to do here. We got lots going on, so we'll see you on the other side.
Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron prides themselves on service, resourcefulness, knowledge of the law, and attention to detail. So if you or a loved one has been injured by someone else's negligence, they can help. Call 888-637-6347 for help today from Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm will work as hard for your family as you do. Call 800-460-0606 for Capilino Dodd Krebs.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Coons, the owner of AMC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to AMC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. AMC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
When calamity strikes, will you be ready? Centex Tactical Gear in Temple has your military surplus equipment, gun accessories, duty gear, first aid supplies, bug out bags, and so much more. Call Centex Tactical Gear at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at CentexTacticalGear.com. Centex Tactical has both new and used clothing and equipment to fit your camping, hunting, or prepping needs. Call Centex Tactical in Temple at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at CentexTacticalGear.com.
If you're planning a party for a wedding, birthday, anniversary, corporate event, or just to have fun, and you plan to serve alcohol, you need a bartender. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps bartending service is who you need to call. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps provides a complete portable bartending service. When you provide adult beverages to your guests, you want them served fast, correctly, and with flair. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps can do that for you. TABC certified, professional, and with a complete bar setup, Aaron's can help make your social event one to remember for a long time. Call Aaron's now at 254-482-0557 or email Aaron's at mail@aaronsnightcaps.com. Make Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps your first call and last call when you want a professional bartender for your next social or corporate event. Call 254-482-0557 or go to aaronsnightcaps.com.
And that's powerful stuff.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today, April 8, 2017. I'll tell you what, I enjoyed that last segment. I enjoy them all the time. Lots of information. You know, I know a lot, but heck, I'm always learning. And there's these little twists and turns and loopholes and information in the cracks that, you know, when Rick or Ross come out here and talk, just a lot of stuff to gather, glean, and think about. So make sure I'll have the video of this interview up on YouTube and the Facebook page probably by Tuesday, and also you can go back and listen to the whole program on Podbean, or I got podcasts through iTunes, Podbean, and a couple other ones too. So check it out. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook, go to the radio page, and you can listen to the program if you haven't heard part of it or you want to hear it all again. So check it out there. Now, topic of interest. Let's talk about a lot of things that are happening in the month of April. April 14th, Friday, is our next round robin competition. And up for grabs this month is the IAC Hawk Model 982 12-gauge pump shotgun. And it's a pump shotgun with ghost ring sights and a matte blue finish. It's pretty nice. Now listen, it's only $20 to enter. You shoot for free all night. You compete to win a shotgun and get a hell of a lot of good training in the process. Now, rules are at aaronsgunshop.com at the homepage. Just go click on the link there at the top of the page. It'll give you all the information as to how it works. But it's a lot of fun. I'm telling you, everybody, if you're not a great shooter, you will become a great shooter doing these competitions. It's fun, and you get to learn a lot of tricks for self-defense shooting. Am I saying you're going to be a bullseye shooter? No. I train self-defense training. I don't train marksmanship, bullseye, all that kind of stuff. It's self-defense training. April 15th, it's the next co-ed self-defense with a handgun and home invasion seminar. This is an awesome seminar. It's all day and includes a great barbecue lunch, as well as a whole bunch of great training to go with it. And I'm looking at the flyer. Here you can go on Facebook page, aaronsgunshop.com, and look at the Facebook page there. They got the flyer there. On April 22nd, me and the crew will do the show live at the Real Gun Show being held at the Bell County Expo Center. I'll have special guest C.J. Grisham and attorney Benton Ross Watson discussing C.J.'s legal battles and be visiting with many other vendors too. So come on out and meet us there at the gun show. Check out Aaron's Gun Shop Facebook page for more details on that as well. And finally, on April 29th, Aaron's High Cap Adventures will be putting on a semi-auto rifle seminar. That means ARs, AKs, M1s, M1As, M1 carbines, Tommy guns, etc. If it's a semi-auto rifle, you can train with it. The course is only $200 and includes the following. You're going to learn how to shoot and move under cover, shoot from cover, doing reloads, transitioning from rifle to pistol and pistol to rifle. You learn how to room clear, gun safety and handling, point shooting, and a whole lot more. Zoltan Varga, if you're listening, Zoli, way to go, bud. He's our instructor, main lead instructor, and he's got a great amount of information to give to you. People have taken the class before. I have nothing but excellent things to say. You would lose out if you did not take the course and get training from him. So it's April 29th. Check it out. Now, I wanted to read to you a little story here that is why this would be a great training opportunity for you. You probably heard about the guy in Oklahoma who shot those three intruders with his AR. Well, here's a follow-up story. Oklahoma City. An Oklahoma prosecutor said Monday no charges will be filed against a 23-year-old man who fatally shot three teenage intruders in his home, but that the woman who drove them there was being charged with first-degree murder. Authorities said Zachary Peters was home alone when he shot Maxwell Cook, Jacob Redfern, and Jacob Woodruff with an AR-15 rifle on March 27 at his home just outside Tulsa suburb of Broken Arrow. It is the opinion of this office that Zachary Peters acted justifiably when he used deadly force to defend his home. Let's see. It was clear he operated completely within the law when he used deadly force. Okay? He was using an AR-15 in his home. We teach you how to do that, okay? Lots of things you should know and learn on how to use a rifle inside your home. It's different than a handgun, although there's a lot of similarities, you know, turning corners, so on and so forth, and just basically how to run and operate the weapon. Now, if you have any questions, give us a call here at the studio. It's 254-697-6633. Or you can get us toll-free at 866-504-1051. You can email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Or just go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, give us a like or two. Tell you what, Trey, since we're right about the top of the hour, let's take a short break. And when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have the voice of law enforcement. So we'll see you on the other side in a couple minutes. When calamity strikes, will you be ready? Centex Tactical Gear in Temple has your military surplus equipment, gun accessories, duty gear, first aid supplies, bug out bags, and so much more. Call Centex Tactical Gear at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at CentexTacticalGear.com. Centex Tactical has both new and used clothing and equipment to fit your camping, hunting, or prepping needs. Call Centex Tactical in Temple at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at CentexTacticalGear.com.
If you're planning a party for a wedding, birthday, anniversary, corporate event, or just to have fun, and you plan to serve alcohol, you need a bartender. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps Bartending Service is who you need to call. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps provides a complete portable bartending service. When you provide adult beverages to your guests, you want them served fast, correctly, and with flair. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps can do that for you. TABC certified, professional, and with a complete bar setup, Aaron's can help make your social event one to remember for a long time. Call Aaron's now at 254-482-0557 or email Aaron's at mail@aaronsnightcaps.com. Make Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps your first call and last call when you want a professional bartender for your next social or corporate event. Call 254-482-0557 or go to aaronsnightcaps.com.
And that's powerful stuff.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's April 8th, 2017, with the 11 o'clock hour, 1 hour to go. And before we get the voice on the radio, I want to make a comment about the April 29th semi-auto rifle. I've got a quote here that I want to read to you. If you have weapons for self-defense and you don't train, you're foolish. Here's a quote. Ability isn't created in a crisis. It only becomes seen. Everything you do or everything you have done in practice and the practice, I'm sorry, everything you have done in practice and the practices you have failed to do come to a head when you're under pressure. That's from John C. Maxwell. So basically, we're going to see what it's all about. And I do that in my class, too. In the second hour of my class, or actually in the first hour, I ask people what their number is on a scale from 1 to 10 as to how much they're going to be carrying that gun. And if they're saying 8, 9s, and 10s, like most of the time, I'm going to say in about an hour, I'm going to see if your number will match your ability to run the gun. So don't be going out there on the street carrying a gun, thinking, I got a gun, I know what I'm doing. And then calamity hits and you have to use it. Well, that's when the training comes in. And if you have failed to train, it is going to show. It's going to be very evident. Okay, now, back to the voice. The voice of law enforcement, Officer Randy Dixon. Officer Randy Dixon is a fighter for freedom, a curator of common sense, and the epitome of encyclopedia. And without further ado, Randy, how you doing?
It's good to see you. I'm great. How are y'all doing today?
Show is yours.
Hope everybody's had a wonderful weekend. It's a nice windy day outside. I know Mr. Dodd said he's going to go fishing, but he better hold on to his hat when he does. I got thrown all over the road coming down from Temple, this wind the way it is. You know, I was listening to the radio show coming in, and what I've got to talk about today is going to go right along with what Mr. Dodd and what Matt had to talk to y'all about today. You know, especially when you're in the field of law enforcement, there's not a week, a day that goes by somebody doesn't call you and ask you, can I shoot somebody if they're in my yard? Can I shoot somebody if they're in my house? And like the predecessors today said, you know, if you're in fear of your life, that's one thing. But just because someone is walking through your yard or someone is maybe looking in your car, you got to be very, very careful. I know that this past week, one of my neighbors there in Temple, she got out at 6 o'clock in the morning to go to get in her car to go to work, and there was a young man that was sitting in her car. Actually, he was trying to take some items out of her car. She was terrified, and the first thing she did was she screamed at him. He took off running. She called 911, and the police came and were able to locate him. But everything like that is something that we all think about, because we're going to have people that are going to be in our around our houses and our cars, and we got to make sure we use good common sense. So I appreciate Matt and Mr. Dodd talking about that today. Mr. Dodd is one of those gentlemen that is a world of information. I've read up on him several times and some of his history, and I tell you what, that the man is a walking encyclopedia of knowledge when it comes to the legal field. Today, what I'm going to talk about is, what is suspicious? How are you suspicious? What makes something a suspicious activity? What should we do if we see suspicious activities? You know, many times a week, your local law enforcement agency receives phone calls or reports on activity that appears different or uncommon for you, that particular area. In law enforcement jargon, we call that suspicious activity. As a police officer, it's very frustrating when we hear after the fact the person saw something that appears unusual but didn't want to bother the police department with something that is trivial or maybe nothing. Then come to find out a crime occurred in the area, same area. Taking a few minutes to report a crime may save yourself or your neighbor's agony of becoming a victim. So what should a person do if they see or hear something suspicious? We're asked that all the time. What should I do? Well, I'm going to tell you what you need to do. You know, you need to first of all think, if it's suspicious to you, it's suspicious to other people. Just because something doesn't look out ordinary, that doesn't mean that you sit back, you go back to watching your TV show, drinking your cold, ice cold tea, and doing things of that nature. It's time that you as a citizen, as a neighbor, take action. And how do you do that? Well, what should a person do if they see or hear something that's that way? They should not wait and think it's nothing or nothing significant. You need to learn these two, three words, call and report. Call and report. A call made today could prevent a theft, a burglary, or something even worse from happening. Every call that is made to law enforcement is answered unless that agency is not doing their job. Then you got a bigger problem. Then you start calling people ahead of them. Every law enforcement agency that receives a call, whether it's trivial or not, should respond to your calls for help. You know, the 911 system is made to report crimes and any other emergency that you feel impacts or could impact your daily life. 911, those three little digits, that is some of the most important thing that we can teach young people and kids. I can't tell you how many times I've heard in the past, well, I didn't want to bother you on 911 because isn't that for true emergencies? When you're in the fear of your life or when you're scared or you see something wrong, that's an emergency, folks. You know, it's time that you learn that it's not a bother. And if a dispatcher or a communications officer treats you like it's a bother, then you need to call and report that person to someone because that is their job. You know, an emergency can be defined in several different ways. Most people define an emergency as an immediate fear of life. Well, let me tell you, we don't know what life is going to be. If you have somebody that's prowling, you have somebody that's trying to get into a house, that is an emergency in all aspects of the road, of the word. I want you to get out of the mindset that it's a bother to call the local law enforcement agency. You know, there's an old saying, it's better to err on the side of caution. And that's all you're doing when you call. When you report something suspicious, it's always better to err on the side of that. Let me give you some information that provides data on what we look for in suspicious activity, what pretty much is classified as that. Please take a minute and think about what I'm fixing to tell you and about what you may have seen in the past. This could have been a clue to what a crime could be or what it could do or even to solve a crime. In instances of certain crimes, such as burglary to a home, police officers will canvass the neighborhood around the location where the crime took place for any potential evidence or witnesses. In many, many canvasses, officers will find out that a neighbor or a witness heard something or saw something suspicious or unusual, but didn't take the time to call the police department or waited until the next morning to report the incident. 24 hours later, it's much harder to clear a crime. It's much harder to find out who did it. In one instance, for instance, that I'm familiar with, a resident saw an unknown man crawling into the window of a neighbor's home, but waited until after he ran an errand to report to the police department. Come on. You know, if you see something, even if it's somebody who's locked themselves out of the house, call the police department and report it. It's better to be safe than sorry. Trust your instincts, ladies and gentlemen. If you see or hear something out of the ordinary and it crosses your mind, even for an instant, call the police, then call immediately. Don't wait. Don't be embarrassed or ashamed to make the call. Police officers will check on the matter and ascertain what's happening and what's occurring. If your suspicions prove to be unfounded, that's a good thing. Police would rather check out an occurrence that turns out to be nothing than launch an investigation into a crime such as a burglary, a theft, or assault, or a rape. That one immediate call to police could stop a criminal act, prevent someone from getting hurt, or even save a life, folks. You know, here about 2 or 3 years ago, we had the entire area from about a 10-county area, had a gentleman that was preying on older women. He was a rapist, and all he did was raped women that were in their 70s or 80s. It took phone calls people putting together clues that cause that person to be found. Take the time to take and report things. It makes it much easier. It makes it much better for your local law enforcement community. Now, here, let me give you a guide to help you determine what's suspicious and maybe what kind of things you should be reporting to the police. Suspicious persons, of course. If you see somebody going door to door in a residential area, this is especially suspicious if you see a person walk to the side or the rear of a home after not getting a response from the front door. You know, every community I'm aware of has requires door-to-door salesmen to be permitted. If they're permitted, then they have a right to go door-to-door knocking on doors. But if they're not, you need to report that to the police department, your sheriff's department, your local law enforcement agency. Let them check the person out. Unknown people waiting in front of my home or a closed business. That should be your clue right there. If you know your neighbors are out of town, you see somebody around the house, call the police department. Call your sheriff's department. Report that. Especially if that person has been there for a while, he could serve as a lookout, or maybe he's simply trying to see if anybody's coming and going. If you see somebody trying to break into a home, that's a no-brainer, folks. Call your police department immediately if you see someone you don't know crawling into a window or breaking into a house or acting like they're going to break into a house. Once again, it's better to be safe than sorry. Also, look for people that are exhibiting unusual behavior. This type of person may be injured under the influence of drugs or alcohol, or may be in need of some type of psychiatric help. You don't know. We don't know until it's checked out. The main thing you do is you don't approach them. It's too unsafe. It's too dangerous for you as a resident to approach someone like that. Call your professionals. Let them come do that. Also, look for people in your neighborhood that are carrying unusual property. If you see someone carrying something unusual down the street or sidewalk, call the police immediately. For example, if you see someone that's maybe pushing a lawnmower down the sidewalk, or maybe someone who's carrying a television, or maybe an armload of clothes, or somebody who's maybe walking away with a bicycle, call the police department, give them a description of the person, let them know where it's at, which direction they're going, and let them come and check it out. You know, there's a lot of things that you as a homeowner can do, you as a citizen can do. We number one, want to protect our property, our own house. But if we do that and we do it safely and securely, then we need to look for our neighbors and take care of our neighbors. We did a program here about 6 weeks ago that talked about that. Taking care of your house, making sure your house is locked, turning your lights on at nighttime. Now, switching from people, let's go a little bit to suspicious vehicles in your neighborhood. Look for certain types of moving vehicles, especially if they're moving slowly or driving without lights at night. If the route and the way they're going seems aimlessly, or they make a couple of trips by, you need to try to get a description of the car if you can. At nighttime, it might be a little bit harder. But try to try to see what you can do as far as the description of the car, maybe a license plate number, if you can see that. Which brings up a very, very important point. Hypothetically, let's say that you're during the daytime hours, that you're going down to the grocery store and you're coming back. You see someone, see a car that you haven't seen in your neighborhood before, or maybe somebody's sitting in a car in your neighborhood. Take the time to jot down the license plate number. Doesn't mean you have to call the police with it. Doesn't mean you have to do anything with it right then and there. But take the time to write as much of the license plate number as you can. A color of the car. Was it a big car, a small car? Was it a Ford, a Chevrolet, if you can figure that out? Was it a Honda? Anything. Write that down somewhere and keep it just in the event that something does happen, did happen, and you may be the one who helped solve that crime. So take the time to be, I hate to use this word, a nosy neighbor. But be nosy for the right reasons. Be nosy about what goes on in your neighborhood. Also look for, if you see a car that's maybe pulled up in somebody's driveway and you know that that person is not home, or maybe it's an elderly person that doesn't get out of the house very much. It could be somebody from home health care, but it couldn't also be somebody that's trying to burglarize their home or rip them off or whatever it may be. So basically what I'm telling you is look, report, look, write down, look, and log. Just keep a track. Keep knowledge of what you're doing. Now, let's say that you come across a pickup that's parked in your neighborhood and it's filled to the brim with things in the back. Maybe it's got somebody's lawnmowers, it's got a chest of drawers, or it's got a TV in the back. If they're moving, they won't mind when the police check them out. But if they're a thief or if they're stealing, then you may have helped prevent somebody else being ripped off or somebody else being stolen. Remember, what you do for other people will come back tenfold in the fact that maybe they'll do the same thing for you in your house, in your neighborhood. There's a program that's been around for years called the Neighborhood Watch Program. Some areas are very strong with it. Some aren't quite so strong. Temple, Belton have a very, very strong Neighborhood Watch Program where they actually get together, the neighbors, they know each other. I dare say that there's neighborhoods in this town and adjacent towns where you don't even know who your next door neighbor is. You don't even know what their names are. You need to get to know that. You need to take the time to learn those things. Also, look for business transactions involving vehicles. If you see on a regular basis a vehicle parked in front of a business or residence or someone going to and from it, what you may be watching is drug transactions. Things like that should be reported to your local law enforcement agency. Don't you get involved with it, but simply, once again, look and report. Look and report. Also, finally, folks, if you see someone going into garages, if you see someone that's milling around a house and you know for a fact that person doesn't live there, that is an absolute no-brainer. Pick up the telephone, call your local law enforcement agency, and let them come out and check that for you. Sure, you have the right, if you're a licensed carrier, to take your gun, go outside, and look around. But I'd whole lot rather you call the police first and let them have a chance to do the job for you. A couple of things real quickly. If you hear loud noises, you hear things banging, if you hear slamming, screaming, arguing, or fighting, breaking glass, unusual barking of dogs that goes on for an extended period of time, these are all things that you ought to call your police department for. One of the things that most people get irritated about, I agree, is barking dogs. You know, it's against the law to have, let the dog bark and bark and bark and bark and not control it. Call your police department. Let them handle that. Let them stop the activity. It also keeps you out of the limelight of being upset with your neighbors. Last but not least, folks, crime is simply an opportunity waiting to happen. Crime can be prevented simply by reducing the opportunity of a crime to exist. Take the time to secure your home and your property. And above all, be a good neighbor. Call, report to the police department, and let them know what's going on. Give them a chance to be able to come out to your house. Give them a chance to be able to help you. That's what they get paid for. That's what they get. You pay your taxes for law enforcement. So, without any further ado today, I wish all of y'all a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Have fun this weekend. Keep safe. And try to remember everything we talked about today, especially about what's suspicious in your neighborhood, and call your local law enforcement agency. Give them a chance to do the job that they're paid to do for you. So until next week, everybody have a great week.
Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Cappellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Cappellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MISO-FIRM.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
When calamity strikes, will you be ready? Centex Tactical Gear in Temple has your military surplus equipment, gun accessories, duty gear, first aid supplies, bug out bags, and so much more. Call Centex Tactical Gear at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at CentexTacticalGear.com. Centex Tactical has both new and used clothing and equipment to fit your camping, hunting, or prepping needs. Call Centex Tactical in Temple at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at CentexTacticalGear.com.
If you're planning a party for a wedding, birthday, anniversary, corporate event, or just to have fun, and you plan to serve alcohol, you need a bartender. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps Bartending Service is who you need to call. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps provides a complete portable bartending service. When you provide adult beverages to your guests, you want them served fast, correctly, and with flair. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps can do that for you. TABC certified, professional, and with a complete bar setup, Aaron's can help make your social event one to remember for a long time. Call Aaron's now at 254-482-0557 or email Aaron's at mail@aaronsnightcaps.com. Make Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps your first call and last call when you want a professional bartender for your next social or corporate event. Call 254-482-0557 or go to aaronsnightcaps.com.
And that's powerful stuff.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's April 8th, 2017, and we're still here live, thank goodness. What we're going to do right now is our product spotlight, and it's going to be the Taurus M380 I-Beam Mini Revolver. And this section is sponsored by ANC Firearms. And so, ladies and gentlemen, you know, if you like this program, if you're enjoying the program and what we're putting out here on the air, it's people like ANC Firearms, Arch Kuntz, the owner, who sponsor and help to make this possible. So I'm asking that you give them a call, 254-983-4417. Check out what they have to offer. They got guns, ammo, knives, reloading equipment, holsters, gun pouches, gun bags, so on and so forth. A lot of things. And if there's something that they don't have, they can get it for you. 983-4417. They're in Heidenhammer, in between Rogers and Temple. So check them out. Talk to Arch. Talk to Clint, Dennis, or Mike, and they've got lots to offer. But today we're talking about the Taurus M380 I-Beam Mini Revolver. And if you've got some type of smart device or you're on your computer, go to my Facebook page, aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the Facebook page and take a look at the picture of the Taurus M380 Mini Revolver. And like I always do, I always read an article or a review from somebody else because I know what my opinions are. And I usually pick one that kind of sticks to what I'm thinking, but it's from somebody else, so you don't just think I'm saying it just to say it. This is from the American Rifleman Online. It's by Gil Horman. Some firearm manufacturers stick doggedly to their tried-and-true catalogs of products, offering a new grip color here or a change in sight options there. But Taurus is boldly trying out new shooting options that some might not even have considered. Taurus is especially attentive to rethinking and reworking the short-barreled defensive revolver. Snubby wheel guns maintain a quiet but loyal following. Men and women looking for a simple and reliable defensive option often choose small revolvers because they are easy to carry and conceal. And as one of the smallest options yet introduced, Taurus now offers the M380 IB Mini chambered in 380 ACP. The 380 is not chambered for .38 Special like most of the defensive wheel guns in this category, and is not a J-frame either. Instead, it fires a 380 ACP cartridge using Taurus's star clips, more commonly known as moon clips, to hold fresh cartridges and to eject the spent cases. The revolver dodges the label J-frame because of its reduced dimensions. That's where the mini in the name comes from. The barrel, frame, and cylinder have all been trimmed down to take advantage of the smaller 380 cartridge. While the grip, trigger guard, and trigger are all the same size as a typical 38 Special, the result is a lighter, more compact revolver that still feels good to hold and to operate. Now, here are some of its features. The blued M380 arrives from the factory with a 5-shot cylinder, compact rubber grip, and a 1.75-inch barrel. The hammer spur has been removed to give the revolver a no-snag profile, which makes it a double-action-only handgun. You can only pull the trigger on that one. Although the trigger is longer and heavier in double-action mode, it's proved to be smooth with a lightly shorter travel distance that might be expected. The overall fit and finish of the revolver is good, with the cylinder and yoke demonstrating a tight lockup. A nice touch that's rarely found on this type of gun is the low-profile adjustable rear sight. Usually, shooters are stuck with learning how to use whatever sight picture arrives on a snubby revolver, but a minor adjustment to the rear sight of this gun moves shots to the center of the target right away. The M380 also has the Taurus security system installed, a lifetime repair policy, and 5 380 ACP Taurus star clips in the case. With all these positive features of this handgun in mind, a burning question remains: why shrink a snubby revolver to chamber the 380 ACP? After working with this gun, this little gun, some good reasons for this choice come to mind. First and foremost is the opportunity to effectively reduce the size of the revolver without reducing its shootability. Unlike some of the now popular tiny pocket rocket semi-autos on the market, this gun has plenty of grip and trigger to work for the regular, comfortable practice on the range. Next is the reduced level of felt recoil this cartridge and gun combination has to offer. It presents a useful middle ground between the ultra-mild and the thump produced by a standard 38 Special or a 357 snub-nose revolver. With the 380 ACP currently enjoying a revival due to the aforementioned pocket autos, a wide variety of soft shooting quality defensive hollow points are readily available. And if the logic holds that the 380 is an adequate stopper for a tiny automatic, then it's a bit hypocritical to dismiss it for the use as a compact revolver. One more reason for chambering 380 in a revolver is also one of the oldest reasons: ammunition compatibility. During the First and Second World Wars, revolvers were chambered for 45 ACP to allow the soldiers who received them to share ammunition with those personnel who were armed with semi-automatics. The same principle holds true today. If you already own and shoot a 380 auto, or you want ammunition compatible revolver for a loved one to carry, then you can add the M380 to your defensive catalog without having to shoulder the expense of adding yet another caliber. Here's some final thoughts. The Taurus 380 IB Mini 380 is a light, compact, reliable defensive revolver. Its reduced dimensions make it comfortable to carry in a purse, pocket, or anywhere else a small snub-nose revolver would fit. The adjustable sights, comfortably sized grip, and modest recoil make it a pleasure to practice with. A snub-nose revolver in 380 may not be a defensive option you would have thought of, but Taurus did. Here are some of the dimensions. The details. It's model 2380121UL M380IB. It's a double action only revolver, 380 ACP. The blue is finished. The finish is blue. Grips are rubber. Sights fixed front sight with an adjustable rear. Barrel length is 1.75 inches. Overall length is 5.95 inches. The height is 4.8 inches, width 1.35, weighs 15.5 ounces, has a 5-round capacity with a 1-in-9 twist. It also comes with star clips. Now, go to my Facebook page, aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the Facebook page, and you'll see a picture of it there, the price tag's on it. It's there at ANC Firearms. And let me make a note. This is me talking now. I have lots of women come to me and ask me what's the best gun to get. And I tell them, I have no clue until I talk to you, see you, get your attitude, so on and so forth. I also have said, women, just because you're a woman, don't have somebody throw a revolver in your hand. And the reason I say that is because a lot of times the revolver's a 38 plus P, 357, and a lot of times a lady can't handle that with proficiency. But looking at this Taurus 380 and the reduced size of the handgun and the reduced recoil of the 380 caliber and being a double action only where there's no bells and whistles, it's literally an idiot gun. You just pick it up and pull the trigger. I think that's a great choice for some women and guys too. It's a neat little packaged revolver, and I like it because it is reduced in its size, yet still has the large feature of the trigger guard, so on and so forth, but the basic overall dimensions of it is reduced, and you can hide it very easily, and there's nothing wrong with the 380 caliber. It'll kill you just as dead as a 25 auto would. So check it out. Give ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer a call at 254-983-4417. Ask for Arch, Clint, Dennis, or Mike. Go ahead and get yours today. I want you to race out there right at 12:01 when I'm off the air. You can leave, but until then, you're going to listen to me. But if you just can't wait, turn the radio on, listen to me, or turn me on your smartphone, whatever. But check it out. And don't forget, like me on Facebook. Trey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, I got a special guest. And we're going to be talking finances with Ricky Williams here, president of Classic Bank here in Cameron. And we're going to have a great talk, conversation. He's going to answer some of my questions. He's going to be very patient with me because I know stuff, but this man knows a heck of a lot more than me, and I'm going to pick his brain. So we'll be back on the other side, and we'll be talking finances. See you on the other side.
Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MISO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
When calamity strikes, will you be ready? Centex Tactical Gear in Temple has your military surplus equipment, gun accessories, duty gear, first aid supplies, bug out bags, and so much more. Call Centex Tactical Gear at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at CentexTacticalGear.com. Centex Tactical has both new and used clothing and equipment to fit your camping, hunting, or prepping needs. Call Centex Tactical in Temple at 254-231-3583 or check them out on the web at CentexTacticalGear.com.
If you're planning a party for a wedding, birthday, anniversary, corporate event, or just to have fun, and you plan to serve alcohol, you need a bartender. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps bartending service is who you need to call. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps provides a complete portable bartending service. When you provide adult beverages to your guests, you want them served fast, correctly, and with flair. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps can do that for you. TABC certified, professional, and with a complete bar setup, Aaron's can help make your social event one to remember for a long time. Call Aaron's now at 254-482-0557 or email Aaron's at mail@aaronsnightcaps.com. Make Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps your first call and last call when you want a professional bartender for your next social or corporate event. Call 254-482-0557 or go to aaronsnightcaps.com.
And that's powerful stuff.
Back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Today, again, it's April 8th, 2017. And sitting next to me here is Richard E. Williams, Jr., president of the Classic Bank here in Cameron. He's been gracious enough to come on air with us to talk about some finances. And we're going to be talking to him in just a second. But what I wanted to do first to open up this section is to give you an idea of why I wanted him on here. And I try to stay protected in case things go bad in all different aspects of my life, finance, medical, water, all that kind of stuff. That's just the way I am. You never know when a hurricane or a tornado is going to come through and you want to be prepared. So I read articles and I see, you know, everybody saying that the economy is getting better, but I look around and I scratch my head. I look at the housing going on in Temple, there's big booms and all that. But then I talk to, or I read articles and listen to people who are respected in their fields and say these are big bubbles and they're going to burst. And if they burst, all these people out there are going to be hurting. And so I wanted to get somebody who's got expertise in the finance world. And that's why we have our guest on today. But I'm going to read an article that kind of gives you an idea of why I think the way I do or why I want to talk to Ricky here. So here we go. This is from Max Slavo. And he writes this. I've been reading him a long time, and his information that he gets is all verifiable, so it's not like he's just coming up with this out of the thin air. But while those at the top of the heap are getting richer, than millions of pounds and millions of kids are struggling more than ever before. As a general institution, the masses increasingly feature frozen wages, evaporating benefits, and part-time hours, and less than stellar opportunities. For these people, just getting by can be very stressful. And that is being reflected in a big way in a recent Gallup poll that has captured unprecedented levels of concern among lower-income people who are statistically terrified of losing their grip, via Wolf Richter of Wolf Street. Lower-income Americans worrying more in general that those with higher income are worrying more than those in higher incomes. Everything is riskier and tougher for them, but nothing compares to the worries about hunger and homelessness. This is from Gallup. Since 2001, worry has been highest among those residing in lower-income households, likely because those with limited financial resources are more at risk of going hungry or becoming homeless. A consistent majority of lower-income adults worried about the problem before 2012, but that has only increased in the past 5 years. On average, across the 13 issues, the percentage of lower-income adults who worry a great deal is 7% points higher than among middle-income Americans and 17 points higher than among upper-income Americans. But differences in concern about hunger and homelessness far exceed the norms. It turns out among Americans making $30,000 or less a year, 67% worry a great deal about hunger and homelessness. Food and shelter, two of the most basic human needs. That's the highest percentage ever in Gallup data series on this question going back to 2001. Obviously, everyone already knows that poor people struggle more than well-off people whose needs are easily provided. The unknown here is why those who are making less than $30,000 per year are so much more worried about hunger, homelessness, and just the basics than they were 15 years ago. Moreover, why are the middle-class people making a healthy $30,000 to $75,000 also more worried than they have been about personally being homeless and hungry? What has changed? Though it is hard to pinpoint, there has been a squeeze on the economy. Somewhere out there, there is a monster. The glut of money created to give the banks liquidity was reinvested back into government bonds and companies' own stock. Investment did not, generally, trickle down to the working man. Jobs weren't created and recovery has never happened, and many people are on the brink of losing everything. Obviously, many of those making at or under $30,000 are finding it pretty difficult to make it through. The disillusionment hasn't helped. Even with the expanded SNAP government food aid program, people are more freaked out than they have ever been about how food is going to be put on their table and about how they're going to keep the roof over their head. The level of worry here is frightening enough in itself. As Wolf Richter asked, is there some particular reason why these things suddenly got a lot riskier, scarier, and uglier in some profound ways for lower-income Americans, those making $30,000 or less a year? So there we go. I read this article, and it brings up 100 million questions for me, and I'm exaggerating, of course. But now we have with us Ricky Williams here, president of Classic Bank in Cameron, and I've got him on. And Ricky, welcome to the program. And make sure you speak into the mic for me, okay?
Okay, good to be here.
Ricky, tell me a little bit. Tell everybody about who you are and a little bio on yourself, because you can tell it better than I could, probably.
I'm president of Classic Bank, here in, based here in Cameron. I'm from Cameron originally. I've been at the bank for 36 or 7 years. The bank has served Cameron, Milam County community for since 1889, but we're in Bastrop County, in Bastrop, and also in Rosebud up in Falls County, and over in Williamson County and at Liberty Hill. So the bank's grown a little bit and still doing business.
So you've got a lot of experience under your belt.
I guess so. I survived.
You survived. Okay. Well, yeah. You know, you can't survive unless you're smart. You got to be able to figure out, either that or you're darn lucky. And luck can only go so far. That's right. So, I mean, you know what you're doing. That's why we got you on here today. And I'm going to be asking some questions of you to maybe help give some clarity on some certain topics. And all I ask is when you speak, just speak into that mic so we can get a good read on you. Ricky, I read that article to you. First of all, let me ask you this. When I read that article, I know this guy. I've read him a lot, and I looked at his information that he gets, and it's information that's out there that's credible. Other places go to reference for information, so you can't argue the information. You may just not want to hear it or something, but what do you think about the article I just read and your opinion, and then we can get into some questions.
Well, my initial take on it is don't worry as much as go do something about it. There's certainly lots to worry about if you know any of the news sources that you watch today. There's lots to be concerned about. I mean, gosh, we bombed a foreign country day before yesterday, that's something to worry about.
That affects the markets, right?
That affects the markets. But there's not much I can do about what happened in Syria day before yesterday. I need to be concerned and concentrating on what I need to do
for
myself.
But you're in your position in finances, knowing that things of that nature, that news story, can affect the markets, and you've been around a while, you kind of know how to adjust and prepare. There's a lot of people out there who are just unfortunately not aware of how it works, how it affects them, what they can do. Obviously, they need to go find out, but they're barely making it as it is, 2-3 jobs. I know many people in that condition, and they have very little time for anything. It's just difficult. So they almost get stuck between a rock and a hard place, and they just got to continue to work. They don't have the time to go reference or do something else to get themselves ahead in life. So what we're going to talk about today is maybe some things, hopefully some people will hear it, give them some insight and ideas and direction as to where to go, okay? I see the story that I read, I see a lot of action, like I said, in Temple. But then I hear about the housing market bubble, the auto bubble, the stock market bubble, all these different bubbles. So that's going to be one of the questions. So why don't we just start right off the bat here? And I can't believe the time has gone that quick. Here's question number one. Now, you've known me for some time, and you know that I teach about being prepared. And being prepared comes in many forms: food, water, medical, communication, finances, etc. Let's stop short from talking doomsday scenarios, but let's talk the importance of preparing for financial troubles locally and nationally that can affect us and what we can do to prepare for it? That's a big, wide open question. Can you give me something to go on?
Well, everybody needs some backup, some extra gunpowder to get through the rough times. One thing if we're looking at this, the lower income group that is most worried, you need, with any kind of investment, you need to look at the time horizon of when you can turn that investment back into liquidity in tough times. For instance, stocks and bonds are probably at least have a 5-year time horizon. So if there's a potential that you could need to turn that back into cash within a shorter time frame, that may not be the best investment for
you. So for the common man like me, let's say I've got $1,000, I want to get some bonds.
Right,
okay?
Right.
But the bonds have a 5-year life on them. And if I put the money in there in 5 years, I get the benefits off those bonds. But if for some reason I say I need my money now, I get penalized, all that stuff, or I can't maybe not even get it out. Is that what you're saying?
Right, right. So you need to keep a certain portion of your assets and that you own in some form of liquidity, in cash or in an alternate for that is gold or silver for a really serious mm-hmm. downturn when maybe the value of cash is not there any longer.
Okay,
I think one of your questions was about gold and silver.
Yeah, I'll get that in a second here. But let me go to my next question. Then we're going to probably wrap all these questions up into conversation, because with one question, it leads into other questions, and then the one other questions lead into those questions. So it's a big full circle here. So let me go to the second one here, and then we'll just have a conversation. Let's talk terminology, because the common man's listening out there. Let's talk terms that the average Joe and Jane should know so that they can make better choices on financial security that would best suit their situation. You just mentioned bonds. And then let's talk about the basic terminologies of where people could invest their monies, what it means, so people out there know.
Okay, stock. A stock is an ownership in the company. Usually a stock certificate goes, whether you own one share or 1,000 shares, it has to do with voting rights, in control of the company, having some say over what activities the company participates in and what things they do. Now, if you own 1,000 shares of General Motors and there's 20 million shares outstanding, your vote's probably not going to count a whole lot. But it does have those rights, and the stock appreciates stock goes up in price as perception of that company's value goes up. Bonds are fixed income investments. They have no voting rights. They basically pay you a return, the interest rate on that investment, on that amount of money, over a period of time. A bond has a fixed interest rate typically, and when interest rates go up, the value of that bond will go down.
Now, you're buying stock off of companies. Where do you get your bonds from?
Bonds are, and a lot of times, bonds are issued by companies or they're issued by the government.
Okay.
And a lot of sources in between, but government bonds are always perceived to be safer, and so you've got national, state, and local bonds. So for instance, Cameron ISD will issue school bonds, those are because of the structure of the Texas public education issuance of bonds. School bonds are historically very, very safe, but also pay a very, very low rate of interest because there's not much risk in that.
That's right.
Investment.
So if you got low risk,
you got low return, you've got high risk, you should expect a high return. And so it gets back to the original question of what risk profile is appropriate for certain individuals.
Isn't it wiser to be a higher risk level at a younger age in case something happens?
If you're recover? If you're young, you want to take with retirement money, you want to take money that you're not going to need for, again, this gets back to the time horizon, money that you're not going to need for 30, 40 years, you want to take quite a bit of risk with it. If you're, like I'm 61, my time horizon is less, so,
yeah,
so I should be, I should have my retirement money in less risky assets, probably bonds are less risky and less equities, less stocks.
Okay.
Because my time horizon, if there's a big downturn and I have a big loss, how much time do I have to recover that?
And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. Let's go over another question. Let's talk precious metals, like we had touched on. Gold, silver, and lead, okay? I'm kidding on the lead. Lead at one point in time, for a short period of time, will be the most precious metal around. But what causes precious metals... It's true. It's true. What causes the precious metals market to go up and down, and why is it important to have precious metals on hand as compared to in the bank?
Okay, well...
You may not like that question.
Precious metals are a commodity, just like cotton and cattle and oranges and water's a commodity, but gold and silver have always, and to some extent oil have always had a perception of being a limited commodity, and therefore.
The key word would be intrinsic, right? It always has value?
Should always have value. Now, I think we've decided in the last maybe 10 or 15 years that, or maybe more recently, that oil is it's much more prolific than we thought it was. And so I don't know that it really fits that mold anymore. The old saying is, so goes oil, so goes gold, so goes silver. Gold and silver, however, do seem to have stood the test of time, that they are a limited commodity, a limited quantity commodity, and therefore they pretty much reflect the rate of inflation. But they also reflect the rate of panic and crisis concern in the world. I think there's been some... gold has been going up pretty steady for the last, I think it's had set some records in the last month or so.
I think it's $1,200,
$1,300. It's $1,255 mm-hmm. yesterday, I think.
Silver went up too. It's about 18.
Silver's up.
Okay, but now let me ask you this because we're short on time. There's different reasons people get gold. One of the reasons, because we teach about being prepared, if our paper money, it's only worth what's written on it because you believe that's what it's worth. But in reality, the paper has no value. And if the belief that money no longer has a value, it's worthless. Whereas if we have extra money and we want to secure ourselves to some degree and diversify our protection against finances, we could purchase using some of that worthless paper money in times of crisis into a precious metal that has intrinsic value and at least have some of your money protected through gold and silver are precious metals. Is that an accurate statement?
Somewhat. I mean, I've always heard and tried to tell people that you probably need to have 5 to 10% of your net worth in precious metals.
That's what I've heard that, yeah.
So, and what's net worth? Say you own your home and it's worth $75,000. You don't have any debt against it. You own your car. It's worth $10,000. You don't have any debt against it. And that's the extent of your assets. Then you have $85,000 worth of net worth. 10% of that would be $8,500 in precious metals that you should own.
And people say, well, you can't eat gold. No, you can't. But when the crisis starts getting better, and there needs to be some form of barter or trade. Precious metal has intrinsic value. Somebody is always going to want it, and it can be a barterable item.
I see two reasons to own gold and silver. One is as an investment because mm-hmm. it keeps up with inflation. That window, again, is probably 5 years, maybe 10 years, that you probably want to own it before you'll see a return from inflation. And then the other is in times of crisis or panic, or when maybe paper money is not worth what we thought it was.
I've read
that you should, you know, you could, if you own gold and silver, then that's going to help you buy what you need to get by.
I will say though about the
dollar, you've heard the expression, the cleanest dirty shirt. Every country in the world does what we do with inflating the value of our currency, and but still the strongest in the world is still the U.S. dollar.
I was about to say, I've read and I've watched video, and I'm going based on what I see. I've not done my homework on to back it up. It says that no fiat currency in the history has ever survived. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, so ours is no different. It's just a matter of time.
Well, it's also because no country has survived longer than, 250, 300 years?
Yeah. Okay, so I'm just saying,
so
I like
fiat
to look
currency
down.
Goes down with the country.
Country, okay,
yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay, that's for another show. Let's go to another question. Let's see, let's talk bubbles. And I'm not talking soapy ones either. I'm talking housing, student loan, auto loan, those types of bubbles. What causes them, and what causes them to pop?
Most bubbles in our modern economy have been caused probably by government regulation or laws, but historically bubbles have been caused by speculation in a particular activity or a commodity or an asset or what causes them to pop is that the price gets over excessive and somebody panics and starts selling and then people are kind of like cattle. They all move towards the cliff and run off the cliff at the same time.
Now look, you got to help me out on this because I'm very bad at this, but let's say for example people can't buy homes but they want to do loans, so they allow people who before were not capable, financially stable enough to meet the criteria to get a loan. Mm-hmm. And then they say, screw it, we're going to cut corners and let these people get it. All of a sudden, all these people have these homes that are out of their price range, and down the road, a short period of time, they pay it, and then all of a sudden, we have problems. Is that an example of how it can happen?
That's an example of that's what happened with the subprime mortgage crisis. Right now, it seems like that there's a subprime auto bubble inflating.
And what if that pops? How would that affect our economy?
Well, you're going to have it would pop when we no longer offered subprime. Well, it would pop when that subprime debt cannot pay that debt back. And what happens is you start having an abundance of used vehicles on the market, and then they all get really cheap. For the last 5 years, the used vehicles have brought pretty good money. In some cases, they bring as much as a new vehicle with low mileage.
This is such an in-depth conversation.
We could have three or four more shows.
That's right, but I want to ask this question. I got like 2 minutes left. Is that right, Trey? So I need a quick answer on this. The stock market, the highest it's ever been, aren't those high numbers just numbers? When the stock market crashes, which it has done before, the value of the stock market just vanishes. Please explain this and how persons involved and who are not involved get affected by that, and how it becomes a calamity for this country. You got 1 minute.
Oh gosh, one of the things you watch with stocks are the price earnings ratio, and those are the highest that they've been in a long, long time. And so the market is very, very high. It's also numerically high. The Dow Jones just sets new records quite often. The S&P, it's probably a time to be a little careful.
Okay, but what I'm getting at real quick is last time it happened and the stock market crashes, this country is in turmoil, majorly financially. Right, I mean, why?
What happens is people that have gains in the stock market, they're taking a little off the table from time to time, and they make other investments. They buy real estate. They buy Maseratis. When they quit buying those things and they quit making those investments, it trickles down.
Okay.
And the economy slows down all around.
Ladies and gentlemen, we ran out of time. Rick, maybe we can get you back on and talk about this. But ladies and gentlemen, check out aaronsgunshop.com. Check out the Facebook page for a repeat of this. Go to the iPod or the podcast and check it out. Until next week, God bless and keep your powder dry.